intercepts the man.
Are you kidding?
This means Marshall. That's the ball. He
didn't cross all summer.
That pass. Oh, get out of Price.
Catching it away. Gianta. In a long. Score.
Oh, look at us. Matthew Gilmour. Well, that's your dash.
Right in front of the number one. A save that was by Kerry White.
And now a 24th Stanley Cup banner will hang from the rafters of the famous Forum in Montreal. The Canadiens win the Stanley Cup.
All right, welcome to another edition of our podcast here on the MontrealBias.com.
Special edition.
Special edition, because no Sean O'Neill.
No Sean O'Neill.
Here with me whispering about himself, Alex Dezan, occasional contributor to the Montreal Bias.
Occasional, but solid.
Very solid.
Really,
very
really
solid.
It provides cohesion, one could say.
One could say that.
One could also lie about these
welcome
things.
Welcome to the podcast.
It's nice to be back talking into a microphone.
It's nice to be talking to a person for me.
Yeah, I'm here in the same room as Zach, you all. So for your own erotic pleasures, you can picture that.
Moving on.
Yeah, that was
Cammy
necessary.
Is Camillary, gone.
Such is the special reason for this.
All right, let's do this. We've got our opening 20. They're all related to the deal.
All
that's all we're
going to
talk about.
Very
it's all
easily.
Anyone's been talking
in
about.
In spite of us talking originally and thinking of 10 questions Habs-related slash NHL-related,
we had to throw them out the window.
That's why we didn't do it last night as planned. We did it tonight.
Yeah, we're recording this on Friday night, one day following
less than 24
the
hours.
Highly controversial Mike Camilleri for René Bork deal, or as we're calling it now, the Holland trade.
The Holland trade.
The Holland
because
trade.
Of the other member of the trade.
Well said. All right, let's jump into this right now. Do you care that Cammy was dealt mid-game? Let's start with that, because there's a controversy today about Mike Camilleri getting dealt after two periods of hockey, and some people think that that was wrong. Do you care?
And this is a great question, because immediately, and everyone's gut reaction, I think, should be that it rubs them the wrong way. There's something odd about a transaction occurring mid-game.
Yeah. Well, because you never see it. I mean, I'm sure it's happened. I don't think this is the first time.
To say to someone, actually, you aren't playing this period because you are
you're
no longer a
team.
Member of this organization.
Yeah.
We no longer sign your paychecks. That does sound odd. But firstly, and this is broadly, and one could easily argue against this, but like there is no good time to be traded if you're not expecting it. So that kind of sucks. But what is the good time then? That's the real question we're asking. Is it when he's actually at his hotel room so he can more readily call his wife to notify his family of the transaction? Is it when he's at home so they can talk about it in person for the first time?
Well, I think people think, you know, he should be called into the office. And,
yeah, that type of thing.
Sure, there's a way that goes down. But at the same time, it's not conventional. It's not normal. I don't love it. But I don't think it's the big deal that people seem to find
about
it
today. Trades themselves are so... They're so rare to begin with. They're awkward scenarios. It must be incredibly difficult to... Especially someone we signed, someone the city embraces, to make this deal, there's no way to make it easy, right? Like, I mean, it's just inherently an odd situation that one can transact with human beings and send them to other places against their will, or maybe within their will, but either way, it's still an odd thing.
Yeah.
So whether it's in-game or whether it isn't, I mean, the fact remains that it happened as it did. And I don't think it's classless. I think some people are saying...
Yeah, I've heard
to
classless
think they had the gall to do it mid-game is sort of like, well, that's pushing it far because, I mean, what is the good time? Like, if they've been really hammering out this deal, which we'll get to later, for upwards of a month, it takes time for these things to occur. Once they finally do materialize, they happen. That's when they happen. I mean, sometimes these deals happen in the middle of the night, and then they have to wait for the guy to wake up, so the first thing that happens in the morning is he gets that news.
Anytime
so
it's going to happen with the team on the road and, the general manager not there, it's going to be a little awkward. But to say classless, the Cunningworth, the way Jacques Martin was fired, that was strange.
Well.
The Pern firing
an
is
hour
a perfect,
before the game.
Those I didn't like. Yeah. Those I didn't think that's not the way you transact business, especially because this is a decision that, you know, you've made and there's time to think about it. And but with a trade like this, if this was finally, the trade was finally made in the final moment, I think you gotta, you know, it happens when it happens.
I understand why it rubs people the wrong way, but I think everyone should stop and think about why that is and realize that it's not quite such a big deal.
Number two, do you think Cammy's comments led to him being dealt?
This is really the crux of our understanding of this deal, in a way. A lot hinges upon our understanding of whether or not what he said led to a deal occurring the following day.
Yeah.
It seems hasty, it seems improbable, and that this is what I think, is that these are complicated matters. We're talking salaries of millions of dollars, we're talking about trying to equate players' value, both past, present, and future, in aligning a deal. Finding a team to even have this discussion with takes time.
Yeah.
There's no way that they were unhappy with those comments. This is in my opinion. There's no way they did not like those comments, the organization, and then decided, we got to trade this guy. And then the next day made the deal? That's not how fast things happen.
No, that would never go down.
That would
like
be
that.
The fastest trade in NHL history, I think. Aside from.
Well, especially with the players involved, with the draft picks and the.
Yeah, especially because it isn't just some minor. It's not like it's a fourth liner. They said, okay, drop this guy and pick up this guy.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, this is a large contract, a big name player.
It's a one-for-one deal, maybe, and it was well known that Bork's kind of been on the trade block for a while, so Gauthier, maybe he gets pissed, and he gives a call to Feaster in Calgary and goes, hey, look, I've got Cammy, Bork straight up. Then that can happen like that. Yeah. But either you can't sell me.
Especially because of the fact that it isn't a straight-up deal. It isn't Bork for Cammy.
No.
There are two draft picks and another player involved.
Exactly.
Two other players. I assume that... We are talking here about, I mean, those were probably the details that had to be ironed out over more time rather than the Cammy Bork part.
Well, which brings us to question number three. Do you believe, as Feaster and Gauthier have both said, that this has been in the works since early December, this trade?
This is possible in that I think they may have contacted one another and something said, maybe both players mentioned who they were shopping, mentioned... And then said, let's get back to one another in a little while and see what do we have to tack on or remove from this in order for this deal to happen, that type of thing. I don't think they were calling each other daily and hammering out the details.
That's not how these things work.
Especially at that time of year. I don't think you get, especially over the Christmas break. Like, I'm sure they didn't talk to each other between Christmas and New Year's because they're human beings with families and they, although their jobs are important and stressful, they aren't doing them 24/7.
Yeah.
Even though both teams are in dire situations and maybe need someone working 24/7.
Although Calgary's actually turning it around right now.
Yeah, they are, and they have help with that. But yeah, the fact, I mean, a month, yes, in that a month from first contact, I believe, so ironing out the details.
What we're focusing on with this question, though, is it wasn't something, Camilleri's last week and a half didn't suddenly inspire. The booze that came down on Camilleri at the Bell Center didn't suddenly inspire this deal to happen.
No, it couldn't have. I mean, this is something, and let's face it, I mean... And in fairness to Mike, he's been injured, and like especially that first one was just such a fluke, and you hate to see that happen to a guy, especially in a game where he scores the opening goal with that game in Winnipeg, the second game of the season. But the fact remains that he only has 9 goals this year.
Yeah.
And there's definitely, and when you're paying, I mean, we'll get to Scott Gomez later, I'm sure, as we always do, but when you're paying someone $6 million, you're expecting a bit more than that. And now we'll get into what he's done in the past for us, which is admirable, but... I'm sure that'll come up later anyway.
All right, let's speak to the booing. Question 4. Why all the outrage for a guy that had the fans booed at home in his final home game?
By the outrage, we mean what occurred in the last 24 hours.
People are very upset about this trade.
And I saw, and it's interesting that apparently...
And this is a guy that was called, literally the fans were pinning the problems of the Habs, and you could tell by the way the boos went down. They were pinning many of the problems on Mike Camilleri, at least using him as the, because Scott Gomez isn't out there on the ice to be the scapegoat right now. So it had become Mike Camilleri. All of a sudden, he's shipped out with a, we'll talk about the return coming up, but with something that I think is comparable returning and everyone's opinion on how comparable and where that's its own thing. But there's a deal that's done so you've got rid of the guy you booed. And those boos were targeted at him on Saturday night, no question about it. So that's what, I'm surprised everyone suddenly loves Mike Camilleri this morning.
Firstly, I think that, the comment that it all comes down really to the cup run season. He had 26 goals. That's a great regular season. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with that at all. But the 13 goals in 19 games in the playoffs, stepping it up, that clutchness, it seemed like he was the kind of go-to guy one, like the final shot guy, as you would refer to in the NBA.
But that's in the past.
I agree. But the fact remains that he still, in spite of getting paid so much, does have that potential to go off for big games. Mm-hmm. He's a streaky player. Goal scorers are almost inherent, aside from a handful of extreme talents, are almost inherently streaky players.
Yeah.
He's been down, and he's had injuries, and I think that should be, I mean, you can't write off someone's performance to injury all the time, but mm-hmm. he's had two separate injuries, both kind of fluky. So you've had this breakup of his flow. Maybe he just needed actually not decreased ice time. Maybe he needed to be pushed with confidence and say, you're getting your regular minutes, I know you're in a slump, let's go with it. Like, he's the kind of guy that can fire off 10, 12 goals in a month.
Oh, and I mean, it kind of looked like he was coming around. Yeah, following the Marte firing, it looked like he was coming around.
Yeah.
All right, so question five speaks to that a little bit. How much weight should be put on what he did in the playoffs? In the last two playoffs, because, I mean, as far as the 09-10 run, he was obviously impressive beyond belief, but even last season, I believe he had 10 points in 7 games.
10 points, 7 games, 3 goals, 7 assists, I think it was, yeah.
And that wasn't insane, but that's more than a point a game.
That's above. He does, I think, marginally average more than a point a game as a playoff performer, and somewhere around.
So how much weight do we put on that?
That's a good question, because I think some people like to assume that once someone has a great playoff performance, that's what they do in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And because he's done it, even though last season was only one round, I think you could say over the course of the last two seasons, Mike Camilleri has been one of the best playoff performers in the NHL. You could say that.
You
even though the Canadians only have 4 rounds in that, and one of those rounds was abysmal. So you have to you can particularly weight the Pittsburgh and Washington rounds 2 years ago. But the fact remains that, and this is a question that I've wondered about. I mean, it's.
Because everyone is putting the weight.
You love
Nobody's talking about the 9 goals this season. Nobody's outraged that guy's traded.
Yeah.
But people say, hey, we just lost a guy who, if we were to make the playoffs, which isn't going to happen, but when we make the playoffs again someday, he can go off. He can be the guy that takes us to that next level.
And the fact is that you want, like, that's what great players do. Great players play in great games. Yep. They show up in great games. That's where their talent comes out, is under extreme pressure. And that's why Camilleri sometimes seems like he fits in Montreal, is because he clearly likes that big market. Like, he's played LA, he's played Calgary. Like, these are not small market teams.
No, he knew what it meant to be a Habs.
But the fact remains that you also have to then ask the question, if some people are complaining about the trade based on the grounds of past playoff performances, why did he have half as many goals in those 19 playoff games than he did in that entire 82-game season prior to that?
There you go.
And that is something that, like, one obviously has to consider. Yes, it's the kind of thing. I mean, NHL seasons are long, and some guys are, they're professionals. They know how to save themselves for playoffs. They know how to save themselves for runs, and I think Mike Camilleri is that kind of guy.
But does that mean he's taking the rest of the time off?
But one guy has scored. I mean, he scored 39 goals in a season. Why does he score 39 goals? He scored 39 goals in that season 2 years ago, too, but he needed the playoffs to do it. Why isn't there a bit more production up front in the regular season? And that's something that you have to factor in. And you can,
All right, number six. So what do we expect from him in Calgary? He's returning to the place where he played one season, his best season of his career, a stellar season. 39 goals for anybody this day and age in the NHL is substantial.
Mm.
What do we expect from him?
I think he is going to play well. I think, like you said, I think he was coming around to begin with.
Yeah.
Probably getting his legs under him. I think he was probably not 100% for the last month.
That's been argued a lot over the course of the past two seasons. He's a streaky guy, but there's also been the argument perhaps he hasn't been healthy the whole time. On the other hand, I mean, for everybody who wants to hang Gauthier because Markov isn't healthy and seemed to be a guy who got hurt a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Camilleri is comparable, not comparable in terms of the size of the injury, but in terms of how often he's been injured since he's been a Hab.
That's true.
Not for long stretches, but, you know, he hasn't played a complete season since he's been in a Montreal uniform. Yeah.
And that, I mean, I think we're going to see more than 9 goals out of Mike Camilleri in the second half of the season.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, I expect that. But I don't know that we are, some people I think are expecting him to absolutely go off as sort of a screw you to Montreal and score the 25.
Here's something interesting. and I know we're supposed to move on to the next question, but I just want to throw this out there. Who, because at this moment, Bork has four more goals than Camilleri.
Right.
Who finishes with more goals?
That's a good question. Adding a question.
It's just a bonus. It's a bonus question for you.
I'm going to say Bork, but only because he has that advantage.
Four goal advantage? Yeah.
It could be very close, and it could be Camilleri. That's only four goals.
I expect a boost from Bork, too, because he's excited. He was the guy who I think was getting a little complacent in Calgary.
And that's something...
which we'll deal with later.
Yeah, exactly. We'll get into it.
All right. Number seven, why is Cammy moved three times in a short career?
That's an odd thing, too, and it's like... He had the sort of odd misfortune of his first two seasons in LA, both splitting time between the NHL and the AHL, which happened.
That's a common. Yeah.
But then when it seemed that he was NHL ready, the strike happened and he had to play a season in the AHL, which is not the end of the world. But I think that may have actually served as good for him because he went back to the AHL and scored like 46 goals or something like that. And after those 46, came back to LA and then started producing.
Yeah.
But... So then you have this guy that you've invested time in, both in your minor league system and in the NHL, by giving him little chances in his first couple seasons. He comes back, he starts producing, doesn't end up re-signing with your team. He was traded to Calgary, is that right?
Yes, he was dealt to Calgary.
Dealt to Calgary, sort of oddly, a young star. I'm not sure what that deal was.
What was that? Exactly.
What was that? Then Calgary stays for 1 year, scores 39 goals. LA was probably kicking
And we know
themselves.
Why, like... The Bouwmeester signing in Calgary was the reason they didn't have space for Cammy.
Right.
Although, criticism was against him at that point, irony of ironies, that he hadn't produced in the playoffs, and they needed guys who could produce in the playoffs.
And that's not totally fair, because they played one playoff series in Calgary when he was in Calgary, and he had 3 points in six games. That's not awful by any stretch. I mean,
it's not fantastic, but you can't pin a guy as a non-performer at that point.
That would be unfair. But still not re-signed. Comes to Montreal for a hefty sum of money.
2.5 seasons and gone again.
That's
a lot of teams early on for a guy who's 40-goal potential.
And we have hypothetically heard from multiple sources, both journalistic and I think even within the organization on the slide, that he's not necessarily the best locker room guy.
Yeah, we know a few people, and this I've heard this substantiated from a few angles. And, it's a friendable friend thing.
Right.
Like, you know, it definitely... take it with a handful of salt, but like I've heard multiple stories from people who work with hockey equipment companies that deal directly with the Habs and whatnot, that he's a dick.
Yeah.
That people don't like him, that he wasn't well liked in the locker room. I mean, sometimes you're willing to put up with a guy who's a bit more of an asshole because
he scores goals.
Of what he can do. I mean, if Matthew Darche acted like a prima donna, but that clearly had something to do with it.
Yeah,
all right,
we
move on.
That's an important.
Just as Cammy has moved on.
Oh.
We move on to the guy that we get. I think a lot of is being
Holland.
Put on... Yes. Holland. No. What does Bork offer to Montreal that Cammy didn't? Besides 2 feet.
This is, I would say, firstly, one thing... I'll start with something that he doesn't offer, in fairness.
Okay.
And that is that he doesn't offer proven big seasons and playoff performances.
No.
He has had two very consistent years in the last 2 years.
He reminds me so much of Andre Kostitsyn in that he's a guy that people say has much more talent than they work for.
Yeah.
And if they work, they could be 40-goal scorers for sure. So that's what they say about him. And the same with Kostitsyn in that we say, he's off and on. But you look at Kostitsyn's numbers. If you're just looking at the end of these guys are like clockwork.
Mm-hmm.
In Kostitsyn is 20 to 25 goals. And... from Bork getting 25 to 30, to 25 to 29.
And it's funny because they're the type of players who sometimes might get 5 goals over the course of 3 months and then pick up their other 20 or 22 in the last 3 months. Like, and that's...
which makes them streaky, but...
streaky and difficult, therefore difficult to evaluate.
Yeah.
That's why it's a difficult trade to evaluate in some senses. But what he... back to the question, what he does bring that Camilleri didn't have, is firstly dynamic scoring...
Yes.
He's a shooter.
Yes.
But he can also drive hard to the net because of his size. And that's the second factor, which is just straight up size. He's 6'3", 210 or
6'2".
6'2", 207, whatever.
Like that.
So, I mean, that is, to me, he resembles more of an Eric Cole in sort of a speedy cut into the net.
And who is Montreal fans had more of a romance with this season than Eric Cole?
Exactly. And, you know.
The only guy having a good season.
Yeah. And even then, that's the thing about him, too, is if he had more around
imagine
him,
if everyone else was having a decent season.
Yeah, exactly. He'd
Where's
be laughing. He'd have 5 more goals, at least, you know.
And let's not beat around the bush here. Rene Bourque's having a good season.
Yep. And even though for someone who
he's on pace exactly for what he does.
Yeah.
26, 27. Exactly. Right there. Perfect. Number 9, is it possible that both teams win in this deal? When all said and done, do both teams end up in a better place? Is this one of these tit-for-tat, dollar-for-dollar deals that actually works in everyone's favor?
This is the kind of question that, for some reason, is never evaluated within the first 24 hours of a trade.
No, there's always we always have to declare
Who won? Who
Somebody's
won
arm's
got to
be raised
Who's
after
losing?
The fight.
That's exactly what it is. And to me, and I think there's a logical reason why you and I didn't think to ask this question until 24 hours after where we are now. Because the more you think about it, and even Bob McKenzie reevaluated his position after sort of condemning the deal last night, woke up this morning and said,
he said even Montreal might have won.
Yeah. So, I think because there is a debate, firstly, shows that maybe it is even. And secondly, we have two teams. Yes, Calgary is turning around, but let's face it, two struggling teams, two struggling organizations, two struggling GMs, definitely, unquestionably, who make a move. Both teams gain a certain thing, both teams lose a certain thing, but the fact remains that sometimes streaky guys who are streaky scorers and talented offensively need a change of environment. And even though they're both,
I think there's a very solid chance that that's exactly the case with these guys.
Yeah, it's quite possible. And the thing, it's funny because I remember we both thought that Rene Bourque was younger than he was.
Yeah.
We both thought
he's about 6 months older than Camilleri.
Something,
Which, I mean, so means,
they're the same
as far as we're concerned, they're the exact same age.
Exactly. And Cammy just has one big season that Bourque doesn't, the 39.
Mm-hmm.
And he also has the, maybe more importantly, the playoff performance.
Definitely more importantly.
That Bourque doesn't have.
Yeah.
So that's one thing where Montreal can say that they're losing. But let's not forget we've upgraded a draft pick from 5 to 2, and this is a team who has traded away their second-round picks the last 3 years.
We haven't had a second-round pick since we won the Cup.
So, and Calgary's second-round pick is probably going to be in the better half of that round anyway.
I think they're going to... I don't know. They're going to... I feel like they might make the... get into the 8th spot.
It's quite possible. They could squeak in. I mean, they've got the experience, and that's the thing. I mean, they're an old team. They're the oldest team in the league, I think. But they do have experience.
Here's what I will say. And this is, probably not worth all that much, but if we're just playing fantasy hockey, and earlier this season I'd offered you Bourque for Cammy, straight up. So, the fact that $3 million comes off, you don't give a shit because you got a lot, it's fantasy.
Straight up guy for guy.
I say Cammy for Bourque, we both have one of them on a fan. Look, you take that deal.
I think I would because in a fantasy league, I would...
I'm saying if we're...
I would take that deal.
I
would take that deal because, firstly, you're looking at this season.
Yeah.
What you're going to get out of that individual this season. And secondly, you're looking at Camilleri, who was injured twice. So he's already been disappointing for you.
We are way past the time for bringing in.
We're talking about fantasy.
But we'll finish here. Number 10. So it's over. The Cammy era... in Montreal,
Cammy Gate
is over.
Has occurred.
What's the grade you give him on his time in Montreal?
His time in Montreal.
What does Mike Camilleri get for you as a grade? I want you to take into consideration here the fact that he was making $6 million a season.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Of course.
Taking everything.
To me, right now there are two Mars on his time in Montreal. One is just that he was getting paid too much.
Yes.
And the second one just being that he had this lackluster start to this season.
Mm-hmm.
And even in his first season, he only scored 19 goals with Montreal. He had 26. Oh, sorry. Yeah.
No, vice versa. Last season, he scored 19.
Oh, sorry. My fault. Yeah.
Season 1,
so
26.
He had 19 last year. For someone earning $6 million, that is far too little. Again, he had a fantastic playoff performance. And
that's the whole thing, isn't it?
It really is.
The playoff performance is the whole thing. Because otherwise... Rene Bourque, if he has the seasons he's had so far and is on pace for exactly, he will already score more this season than Cammy did in his two seasons.
That's
two
one
and
thing
a half
about
seasons in
Bourque. I mean, he hasn't had the same playoff opportunities that Cammy has had.
No, not at all.
He hasn't been involved in a team who had a chance to make a run like we did under Halak. But so in terms of evaluating, giving him a letter grade, I mean, I don't think you can go any lower than B+.
No, definitely not.
And I think that I would probably give A-.
The minus I would as well.
Being
that would be,
last year being disappointing, the beginning of this season being disappointing, but the injuries make it a little more permissible.
Yeah.
But the fact remains, 26 is solid. The previous season still paid too much, but those playoff performances definitely put him in the A category. There's no question. You can't lower him because without him... That's the thing. We were talking about
this
earlier.
I mean, this season... doesn't help any. I think this season takes him from an A to an A minus.
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. And that's I think maybe even last season, regular season, might have done that too. 19 goals at $6 million. That's just not. I mean, there's no. I mean, it's so weird because we have Scott Gomez to have to deal with in this regard. So, like, Cammy looks like an absolute stud compared to him because he's scored a goal in the last year. Scott Gomez, it will be 1 year February 5th since he last scored a goal in the NHL. And again, to fairness to him, he's been hurt.
He's back on
Saturday.
Will he get a goal in the next 2.5 weeks? Odds are no, right?
I don't think so. But, no, I don't think so. I don't see how he could.
Here's a question we didn't ask in our opening 20. And it's, I mean, probably the biggest question. Do you like the deal or not?
Right now I do. I'm not saying it was definitely the best move for the Canadians. I'm not saying it's 100% guaranteed to work out that we won
the deal.
No, I
feel like this is, like, everyone feels like you need to, like we said, you got to pick a winner and loser. Do you love the deal or you hate it?
Yeah.
I don't hate the deal, and I certainly don't love it.
Right. I think that... I mean, there actually is one part of the deal that we haven't mentioned yet, and that is that we earned $3 million on it. And yes, you know, a lot of this money is accounted for in needing to re-sign PK and Price, but at least we have it to contribute towards those players. Like, that's a win in that regard. And the fact that Bork, I mean, it is a long contract. We have him for another 5 years, I believe. But he's making $3 million off the cap right now. That's the kind of guy who, like, if he's given the right system, if Montreal can put the right pieces around him... I mean, he can. I think he can score 30-35. And if you're getting that guy for three,
you're saying that's his ceiling.
I'm saying that's his ceiling.
That's his ceiling. That's not. That's the
ceiling. No. Yeah. I think that's his ceiling. I think he can easily score between 25 and 30, though. Especially if you put the right guys around him. Like we're looking at for $3 million. That's acceptable because that's what we were paying Camilleri at six to get pretty much the same numbers in the regular season.
Yes,
you have to add that.
I mean, we have no proof that Bork can't do anything in the postseason.
Right.
But to expect what Camilleri did is insane. No, well, nobody does that, essentially. Yeah.
I think what really it gets down to is, I mean, where do you or anyone think, like, where does this team have to go? Clearly we're sitting in 12th, I think, right now, maybe 13th. Like, this team needs to make moves.
Yeah.
Where do you think it
for
needs...
For the future, though.
Yes, of course.
Who cares about this season?
So what things do you think you need to do? I think we need to get bigger. Mm-hmm. That happened.
Happened.
I think we need to get, I mean...
We need to clear some of the giant contracts.
We did. And that's huge, and we'll probably get into that more. But, like, we needed to get rid of a big contract. $6 million's big. Because we have guys that we have to re-sign. Franchise guys that we have to re-sign. And we have to, I think, also prove to the guys that we do want to keep on this team, the young guys that we do want to keep on this team, that we are actively... making changes to hopefully put those guys in the best possible situation.
Yeah.
And so to free up that bit of money that they did in this, not only will re-sign those guys that they want to keep, but also could contribute towards acquiring someone else that might make their lives a lot better, that could make this team a lot better. So to me, like, that size upgrade, and I'm not saying every forward on the team has to be 6'2". I'm saying you have to have...
The majority of your forwards have to be over 6 feet tall.
The majority of your forwards have to be over 5'10".
Yeah.
Like, and we, like, that almost sounds like a joke, but we have so many people under 5'10". It's absurd. You can't have that. And I'm not saying size is guaranteed to win. I think it's actually good to have a really nice mix of that.
Yeah.
And so I think if you're keeping guys like Tomas Plekanec...
Which we're keeping.
Like, he's a small... I love David Desharnais. I feel like there's a couple guys like that. Gianta's unfortunately hurt. But these are three small guys who... If they had more larger guys around them, their games would correspond so well.
Yeah.
And so this one move, again, not saying it's the best, not saying it's intrinsically the best situation for the Canadians, but the fact remains that it certainly doesn't hurt us.
You don't think it hurts us?
No.
That's fair. Here's my problem. Well, to quote Peter Laviolette on 24/7, typical Montreal. The fact is, Habs fans are this morning and throughout the day today, and as they're processing this trade, they're looking at the ultimate worst that Rene Bork can bring to us. Mm-hmm. Everyone, all the criticisms that go with Bork, that's what people are bringing up as examples. And everything positive that Cammy's ever done,
that's
what we've traded away.
Yeah.
Like, come on, there's no way... that Bork only comes with negatives, and
Cammy,
who called the team maybe justified. I'm not saying he wasn't, but this was a guy who spoke out, I think, in a way that I don't like. I don't like what he said. You know, things stay in lock. If you got a problem with the way the team's playing, if you think they're preparing, that's in-house. There's no need to go to François Gagnon and Arpin Basu and discuss that. And I don't mind that he's candid, and I like that he was candid, but at the same time, you know, this is a guy who clearly doesn't only come with upside. $6 million. 9 goals right now.
Yeah.
This isn't a guy who we suddenly traded
after
away.
After 19 last year, so he's on pace for pretty much a similar type of season.
An identical season once more. So it's, I just find that so typical of us at this point, to assume that everything that Bork's going to bring to the table will be all his worst stuff. And everything that Cammy's suddenly going to bring to the table is going to be the Cammy that we saw during that playoff stretch.
Yeah, that's totally fair. I think that, and that's sort of how Montreal, a book could be written about this, and it probably has, and if it hasn't, we should get on it right away.
Typing.
And that is just, the irrationality. It's not because it's Montreal. It's not because of the individuals who are the fans. It's because they have such a storied history, the Canadiens do, and the fans, for some reason, expect excellence. I have the utmost respect for that, and I feel like fans should revere their organization entirely.
Especially when you've got the most reverential organization.
This NHL is very, very different from the NHL in which we won those cups.
Yes.
And if we are going to succeed, there are going to be good times and bad. It's not going to be like the 50s and 70s again. It can't
be. But the problem is, for 20-plus years, it's been pretty much bad.
It has been. It's difficult to attract players to this market that there's, which I find shameful. I can't believe that there are individuals who'd rather sign a big deal for somewhere warm, even if that team is bad and even if that city hates hockey. That's the problem.
Hockey.
Okay. It's like hockey, but when you're talking about trades.
Okay, stuff. I see.
You'll get it later. but that's what overexpansion does. Like that is what kills leagues. That is what kills superpower markets. That's what killed Montreal and Toronto, you could argue. If there were four fewer teams in this league, think of the quality of hockey that would be being played. The quality of a fourth line, how that would change.
So what are you reducing? You're reducing 100 player positions, more or less?
Yeah, pretty well.
100 less players, who obviously the NHLPA would, you know, be super opposed to. But at the same time, the quality of the game.
The quality of the game, and it would make every team. That's one thing about this is
suddenly the majority of the fourth lines in the NHL aren't in the NHL anymore.
Yeah, that's it. And that is what.
If you want to increase scoring, you want to find a way to increase scoring in 2 seconds.
Don't tinker with net size and pad size.
Get rid of four teams.
That'd be incredible. Get rid of two teams. Think of how that would change. 50 players.
Get rid of Phoenix and make your choice of whoever the other one's going to be.
And Toronto.
Who needs the Maple Leafs? Do you want to get off this for a second? And let's take a look because there's still a team that plays hockey. And things aren't going well. They won two of their last three, I suppose. Mm-hmm. You could look at it that way. But things now need to be done. One way or the other. And there's rumor that Gauthier has more up his sleeve, or Jeff Molson, whoever is actually calling the shots.
At this point.
If you're driving the ship right now, and the Bork deal's happened, and I'm calling it that now, because Bork's our boy now. Let's get behind him.
The Holland deal.
The Holland deal, exactly. What do you do from here forth?
Right now,
in terms of personnel, not in terms of coaching.
Right. As we said, one of the priorities is just to get rid of big contracts.
Yes.
And I think we're at the point where we can justifiably say with relative confidence that Scott Gomez was a failure. We have to buy that.
Can we not sit on
Montreal is the biggest, second biggest, I don't know if technically Toronto is bigger, but either way, one of the top three biggest markets in the league. They make so much money.
And Jeff Molson just saved himself a crap load of money because Cammy's deal was backloaded.
Yeah.
So it's more than the $6 million. I don't know the actual numbers, but I know for a fact that he just saved himself definitely the equivalent of whatever Gomez or no of the $7 million that Gomez's contract is. You know, give or take probably a mil here or there, one way or the other.
As Sean O'Neill's awesome assessment of the league and what the Canadiens can learn from every team is, what we can learn from the New York Rangers is that buying out contracts can lead to success more quickly.
We have one privilege, one advantage of being the Canadiens.
Is that we have the money to potentially do it. It sucks that we have to take that hit and say, okay, that was an awful mistake.
Yeah.
We're going to buy you out, Scotty. Some team will sign him. I would love to buy him out and then re-sign him for $1 million a season.
Yep.
That's obviously not going to happen. But New York bought out Drury and they bought out Redden, and now they're first in the East. And now they're a Stanley Cup contender.
Mm-hmm.
And if Montreal gets rid of Gomez, if that's the next move, get rid of Gomez, and with this trade, that's $10 million we just gained.
Yes.
We have $10 million to play with. That's huge. With an approaching trade deadline, and we can even save that. We don't even have to use that right now. We can
figure
just
out,
go into free agency this summer. We can use it to play with, maybe offloading a little more at trade deadline if a cup contender is looking for a piece.
Okay, but now the Camilleri is gone. Who are you willing to still part with? Because you just did, no arguments, you just traded away the most lethal weapon we had.
Yep.
At least offensively.
Yep. We've had this discussion.
So how much movement are you willing to make now?
This is who I want to keep on this team. Carey Price, PK Subban, Max Pacioretty, Tomas Plekanec, the four Ps.
Mm-hmm.
You have to leave those guys in place. Georges, we obviously just signed long term. He's not going anywhere. Lars Eller. Everyone else is tradable.
I think Eller is tradable, but for a team that's trying to rebuild, there's no sense to trading a guy like Eller.
He's young. He hasn't totally proven himself. Pacioretty, I said.
Yeah, right.
So those six guys are totally, and this to me is
so Plekky's not movable to you.
Actually, Bork is technically movable.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think Plekanec is movable. Like, we have him long term. I think we got.
He's having a rough season.
He is, but everyone's having a rough season.
Exactly.
I think right now we need to know that there's a core of guys that are younger that we need to hold. Oh, Eric Cole. I don't want to trade Eric Cole, obviously.
No.
I am aware that I'm not saying the captain of our team right now.
Yeah.
And I'm aware that I'm not saying Markov, even though no one would take that contract with someone who's been injured for a decade. But I think that you have to, in these circumstances, think creatively, maybe push your limits of what you would expect to want. I loved Mike Camilleri. I thought he was a great player.
Yes,
I liked him in a Habs uniform. But in a situation like, and I'm not saying dump everyone but those guys and rebuild.
No.
Because this isn't a team that needs to completely bail out and rebuild through picks.
You don't need to do that. There's an assessment out there that you need to do what Chicago did, do what Pittsburgh
right.
did, do what Edmonton's in process on.
Yeah, and that
Look
works.
At the New York Islanders. They've been in rebuild mode for 25 years, and that hasn't worked for them.
Yeah, I can't believe they ever won cups.
Four in a row.
It's incredible.
I know.
And that's the thing. I mean, we're not in a situation where we have to even consider that by any stretch whatsoever. We have some big contracts that if we get rid of, we have a lot of money to play with. We can make this team, like Sean said, like you can rebuild fast like the New York Rangers
yeah.
did. That is totally attainable and reasonable. Teams do it all the time now. Teams reinvent themselves. I mean, that's what I see. Get rid of contracts, get a little bit bigger, and just know who your guys for the future are.
Yeah, I don't. Like you. I mean, Gianta's obviously not tradable now,
right?
Because
he's
out for the season, so that's not going to happen. I'm fine. Like, I like Brian Gianta, and if we're looking to move, and now the Camilleri is gone, moving him is necessary. I think I like Travis Moen. I like what he's done on the line with Kostitsyn and Eller. But if the return is great enough. You move Travis Moen. You move Hal Gill.
You move Andre Kostitsyn.
Yeah, you move on. Unless you can get Kostitsyn signed to something...
Reasonable
that's not long.
Yeah.
I mean, 2 years max on this guy. Anybody that gives Andre Kostitsyn over 2 years, enjoy that.
Yeah.
Because that's going to be awful. I guarantee you that. But a lot of people, and I'm not saying this is wrong, because I sort of agree with it, is suggested that perhaps Camilleri wasn't shopped around enough.
Mm-hmm.
And that Montreal could have got more back for him. But I'm hearing people say things like, well, we could have got a first rounder. Really?
If
really?
That was all
you truly
you got,
believe
maybe.
That? I don't even think so. People value first round picks. I think a little too much, to be honest with you. But at the same time, a guy who, as we said, 9 goals. He hasn't put up anything similar to Calgary since he was there.
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge chunk of cash.
Yeah.
Guy who will finish, right now he's on pace for 18. I don't think there's a team that has the space that can, A, just send you a first rounder and doesn't need to dump any space because they, for some reason, have six, or I guess it would only be 2.7, but it's a $6 million player that you would need to find that room. It just doesn't make sense to me that there's a, that you're going to get a first round pick coming back for Mike Camilleri at this point. I think people were over evaluating what you could get for him. And I'm not saying Goetze maximized what he could have got for Mike Camilleri. I'm not saying that. He maybe could have done a better job. Likely could have got more for him in return. But I think what people are measuring it against in their mind, what would have come back for him, is not realistic.
Trading must be very difficult.
Trading's because, hugely like difficult, especially in the cap world. Yeah. I mean, trading is so hard.
And as I said earlier, like, you can't...
And essentially, you can only deal
you're evaluating a player's current status.
Yeah.
You're evaluating what potential they had based on what they have done in the past, and therefore what you expect that mix to produce in the future.
Let's turn the
that
table.
That is never guaranteed. That's guaranteed in, like, 0.5% of all hockey players. Like, that's guaranteed in a Nick Lidstrom.
Yeah.
It, like, that's the... I mean, you can never guess with anybody.
No.
Sidney Crosby can get injured. Anything can happen, you know? And so... And I'm not defending... I mean, there are some people who probably think this is a horrendous deal, and I just don't see how you can sit down and say this deal is horrendous.
No.
I can understand evaluating it and saying, I think maybe Calgary got the edge, and I'm fine with that if they can defend it justifiably.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, this is just about as almost average a deal, aside from it containing two big names, as you could imagine. We did get trade a five-rounder for a second-rounder.
Yeah.
That I know very well, unless you're Detroit, no one out of the first round really becomes a superstar, and they specialize seventh-round superstars.
It's roulette. Who knows? You spin the wheel, some guys work out, some don't.
Yeah, who knows? Yeah, totally, especially after the first round. But, I mean, we're talking about... Yeah, we're talking about players who have similar goal numbers over the last 2 years in the regular season, who are the exact same age, who played the same position, whose differences are really that one has a little more experience and the other one's a little bigger and comes a little cheaper. Like, that's pretty even.
Okay,
you know what I mean?
Let's say we had Rene Bourque. Rene Bourque had always been a member of the Habs.
Yeah.
They had Mike Camilleri. Same contracts.
Same numbers.
Completely
same
turned
contracts.
It around. Everything's identical. Don't tell me. And our season, everything's identical. Season's going the same. So we've got our guy with 13 goals, which is second on the team. If Bork's played the whole season here and he scored 13, it's only behind Cole. Don't tell me we're not outraged in Montreal right now.
That we traded our
that
second
we've traded
leading scorer.
Bourque away to get a guy who has 9 goals and cost twice as much.
We would be absolutely outraged.
Listeners who are against this deal, think about it for 1 second.
Yeah, and that's why I can't justifiably see how someone could honestly defend this being a complete victory for Calgary.
Yeah, exactly.
I can understand someone saying, I think they got the edge a bit, you know. But you're right. Like, if the roles were exactly reversed and we just traded away our second leading scorer for someone with fewer goals and cost twice as much, we would be so mad.
Okay, everyone's saying Andre Kostitsyn and Rene Bourque are comparable. Fine. Okay, so let's say right now we deal Kostitsyn for, not Getzlaff, because Getzlaff comes with tons of upside, but somebody else who has a, I can't think of anyone off the top of my head, someone else who's making $6 million a season and has nine goals.
Yeah, that would be not...
We go, what the hell? Why did we deal Kostitsyn for that?
We would say that's another goal.
And especially if you're Calgary, a team that has plans on trying to get younger and rebuild and dump some payroll.
In that regard, they did nothing. They got 6 months younger with a guy they've had.
I just don't see how you can be completely outraged by this deal.
Yeah, and that's why I feel like when you stop and break it down, like for us to ask that question like we did, is this a draw? It might be the type, or do both teams win? That's the real question. You know, it actually might be that. And that's the type of question that can only definitively be answered 2 months
years.
Down the road. Even 2 months, you can sort of say, like, hey, look, these guys are responding well to their new environments.
And people, the other thing that I'm thinking about is people are acting like Rene Bourque is, we've got him, he signed 4 more seasons after this one, right? So it's a lengthy contract at $3.33 million. That's not anything that resembles an untradeable deal. No. If he continues along the rate, and there's no reason to believe that Renny Bork's not going to continue to score 25 to 30 a year.
Right. Other than that, he is temperamental, and some people say his attitude is questionable.
No, but you have to with that. The questionable attitude, right. He's done that, right? Right. He's the same guy he's been for the last couple seasons.
Right. 27
and he's
years,
and so. You know, this season apparently his attitude's been the worst, and he's still on pace to do the exact same thing.
Yeah, exactly.
So we have every reason to believe that that will continue going forward. At some point, there's so many teams out there. For $3 million, 3.33, everyone's always going to be willing to take a chance on a guy like that.
Yeah.
Saying the same thing I assume Per Götze said to himself, which was, maybe a change of scenery will be good for this kid.
Well, that's the thing. If you can get 25 goals from someone and you're paying them $3 million, that's almost inherently a win.
Yeah.
I would not even, attitude, streakiness, most scores are streaky anyway, other than a handful. But that is a win. $3 million, if that could get you 25 goals, and if you could fill your roster with 25 goal scorers at $3 million, you'd be a cup contender.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's one way Montreal can look at it.
Well, I mean, Boston's big and whatnot, but Boston essentially is made up of that, a bunch of guys who can score somewhere between, I mean, you've got, you know, Seguin, who seems to be coming on this year and whatnot, but there's no...
Star, that's Star. What we were talking about yesterday. Like,
Bergeron is their best forward.
Yeah.
Anyway, he's great. I would take Patrice Bergeron a second, but at the same time, he's not some superstar for, you know,
not,
they've got a lot
Taves,
of those guys.
He's not,
and that's how they can afford it, too, is you keep these guys who are making a little bit less money and maybe not may not give you, you know, the 50-goal season
and
or anything like that.
Pitches in with 20-25, and you're talking a different game if everyone's putting that in, you know?
All that to say, we've been saying the whole time, I just don't think you can call this a complete loss for Montreal, that people should be out. I know a lot of the outrage stems from the fact that people are just, I think any move Gauthier made that wasn't a blatant win for Montreal,
and that's
people
like
are
I should
be upset with.
Remark, like I have been vocal in the past about how distasteful that Cabrelle deal was. That was just an awful move. And like, I just think this move is, you know, like, we lost a guy that had sentimental value to the city, and we lost a guy who did a lot of good things in one season and one postseason. That's pretty much what we lost. Like, I don't think we lost the best scorer we've had in recent memory.
No,
I think that is
maybe
how far you're willing to go back.
He was a sniper, and the potential was there. But you know, the numbers don't indicate that. That's for sure.
And to me, I mean, like, we can. Yeah, I mean, we also have Eric Cole, who we didn't have before. And I feel like Eric Cole I think they're just pieces missing for the few guys that we need to keep right now. And I don't think Cammy could have been a part of that had the right moves been made. But also, I mean, we have a handful of guys that are absolutely not sacrificable.
Yeah.
And this isn't like chewing him out and throwing him out and saying, like, what he did was valueless. Like, not at all.
Not at all.
I give him an A-minus grade probably in his time in Montreal overall, factoring in everything.
Yeah.
That's a great success. But at the same time, this is a team in a different situation that needs to be doing something.
Yeah.
And even if Gauthier has made some questionable moves, like, we're looking at a move that might benefit both teams, which rarely happens. And those trades are always nice to see, actually. Like,
yeah. And I can't get past the fact that people are as upset as they are, considering... It's one of those things like when... This is a weird comparison. But it reminds me of when Michael Jackson died. Suddenly, we remembered Michael Jackson, who was the Michael Jackson in 1980. The biggest star in the world.
Yeah.
We were, you know... And this came on the heels of Michael Jackson, the pedophile creep that was a punchline to everybody.
Yeah. And that was justifiably crazy.
Exactly.
And that's
suddenly,
actually...
all we remember is Mike Camilleri's 19-point playoff performance, and not the fact that three nights earlier, he was the target of boos at the Bell Center.
Yeah,
and everyone thought he was coasting and had quit on this team.
And
come on,
this reminds me of a question that we were going to ask in the opening 20, and that was, given Yaroslav Halak's shutout of the Canadiens the other night, do you think that should in any way bring up the debate of whether we made the right move or not?
No.
To me, obviously the answer to that question is no.
Yeah.
And it makes you wonder just how people view these types of deals in such fashions. Like, that there is no way in any way that that deal should not have happened. I know the cup run was absolutely phenomenal. Yeah. Halak played out of his mind, but we realized that he played out of his mind.
Exactly.
And if you look at the statistics between Price and Halak right now, I mean, that is not sustainable. He was not that goalie. He got hot at the right time, and it almost won us a cup.
Yeah.
But that was not the player he was going to be his entire... And like we were talking earlier, the bottom fell out in the Philly series, and we didn't even show up.
No.
And he was lackluster and really wasn't there for us.
Exactly.
You know? So, I mean, not to say that Cammy... you know, can't repeat that type of performance in the playoffs. Not to say he can't even maybe score 35 again.
Yeah.
But the fact remains that none of these things are guarantees, and that to say, guarantee that this was a bad move is just
going because there's a perception right now that as immediately starting tomorrow when Mike Camilleri puts on a Flames uniform,
he's going to kill
him. He's the 39-goal, 19-point playoff guy.
Yeah, because that was Calgary Camilleri, so that's what he's going to do again.
There's no guarantee of that. In fact, all likelihood... If we're just being realistic about it, that probably won't happen.
Of course it won't. That won't happen. I don't think he's going to score 40. He's not going to score 40 again. He might have flashes of brilliance where he might be on pace for these types of things. He might be able to redeem this season entirely. I don't know. But with a $6 million price tag, you have to be expecting 35, or else that's a disappointment.
Mm-hmm.
If you sign a guy for $6 million a year, say for 4 years, and he scores 35 for you every time, that's fine. That's great. He's your go-to guy. He's your scorer. He's the center of your offense.
Yeah.
But if he's not doing that, if he's inconsistent, then you didn't get a good deal. And we got rid of that deal, which wasn't necessarily working out 100% of the time. So I don't really see
if
what's
Mike
wrong
Camilleri
with that.
Continues to be the guy he's been the last two seasons in Montreal,
mm-hmm.
paying him $6 million was way too much, especially on a team that was too small to begin with.
Yeah, exactly. So you're adding someone who's 5'9 to that mix that was too small. That's the thing. And that's why, you know, maybe he will do better in Calgary. Because, like, you know, there is strength in diversity.
Yes,
in sizing and speed and in types of lines you have and physicality and everything. If you go all big, you might be too slow. If you go all fast, you're going to be too small.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it is. So if you can mix things up, and so maybe he'll end up fitting in Calgary. That might be a difference. Like, we'll see.
I also love the fact that the main complaint you've heard from Habs fans and critics over the past, 5 years at least, and you could argue the last decade, is they're too small and they don't stand up for themselves and there's no edge to what they do.
We just got a bit bigger.
Bork does all those things.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, he's right now serving a suspension because he probably gets carried a little. Yeah, he doesn't know where the line is.
Yeah.
But we applaud the Boston Bruins. The Boston Bruins are Stanley Cup champs right now and looking like they could be headed for a second in a row.
Yeah.
Because they all play a little bit like Rene Bork.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, they play, yeah.
And I'm not, that, I know someone's going to listen to this and take that out of context that I'm suggesting that Rene Bork is a player who can get, I'm not saying that.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, considering all the criticisms, Pierre Gauthier went and brought back exactly... It's not like this is a guy who scores 15 and does what he does.
Yeah.
He scores 25 plus.
Yeah.
Maybe he takes nights off. No, certainly he takes nights off. And in the future, there's going to be moments on this podcast where I'm frustrated with Rene Bork. I guarantee you that.
Bork he's on a bad
will
team.
Have moments that frustrate us.
Yeah.
I'm sure of that. Absolutely sure of that. But at the same time, suddenly there's a guy you can park in front of Tim Thomas.
Yeah.
Suddenly, if things get a little chippy and maybe even a little out of line, we've got a guy who is willing to walk over that line as well.
Yeah, and I think that that's really important. And you can't say, like, hey, we made one move and made our team bigger. Like,
no.
Obviously we are still a tiny team, probably still the smallest team in the NHL. But the fact remains that you have to look at these things, and like you said, if Molson and or Gauthier have ideas up their sleeve, which now we have a little bit of money to play with, if they smarten up and buy out Gomez, we have a lot. We can do some things if we want. It doesn't have to be now, but can be down the road. The fact remains, as always, that you have to look at these types of moves in context, and you have to wait and see what they do with their new situation down the road.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it comes down to.
And they need to smarten up and buy out Gomez.
They have to buy out Gomez.
Then.
Yeah. Mostly depression.
Depression. Let's get into it. All right. through the magic of editing, we have Sean O'Neill on this podcast because for anyone who thinks that perhaps they've listened to the 2-4 in the past and you and I agree too much on things, we're not on the same page on this one.
No, we're not. I mean, first of all, the way the trade went down was just typical of the way the season spiraled out of control, and it was just another one of those things where it's starting to dawn on me that I don't know if Montreal is ever going to be a winner, because there's just too much pressure in this city. People are just far too impatient, too many knee-jerk reactions, too many panic moves, and this is just, you know, the latest example of that. We traded away our best forward, a legitimate top-line forward, for, you know, 66 cents on the dollar, and I think, you know, it's one of those things that you do out of frustration or panic or trying to rock the boat, but I think the franchise just got set back by about 2 years.
You seriously think that moving Camilleri set us back 2 years?
Well, I mean, I suppose that's an exaggeration, but I did think we traded away our best forward, a guy that we've been searching for 20 years now. I mean, this is a 30-goal scorer type guy, and
he's never scored 30 goals with us, though. I mean, there is that fact.
Yeah, but he scored 26, 27 while playing 65 games. This is also a guy who scored 39 goals with Calgary. He does have that ability. He has a 45-goal season in him, I think, at some point.
And right now he's got a 9-goal season.
Yeah, he does, but he's been injured. He's been playing under Jacques Martin. And, you know, I don't think you trade away your franchise player even for one bad season. Players are going to have bad seasons.
See, I just don't believe he's our franchise player. I think you're overvaluing what he brings to the table.
I don't. I think people are overreacting to a bad first half of the season. They're forgetting how dynamic he is. And we're forgetting what Camilleri can be when he's on his game. And I don't think this is, you know, I don't think the 9 goals is a sign of things to come. I don't think he's on the downswing of his career. I think it's been an extremely frustrating season for everyone. I think he's been a little bit lost, but, you know, people forget just how dynamic he is on that top line. And especially in the playoffs, especially when things matter. You know, I think if we had held on to him, he's, like I said, he would have had a 35-40 goal season next year or the year after. I strongly believe that.
Now, there's a chance he goes and does exactly as you're saying you expect him to do in Calgary. But there's also a chance that it just wasn't going to happen for him in Montreal. I mean, it's been said that if he wanted out, if he was done with playing on this team, you have no choice but to move him.
But I don't think he wanted out. To me, you know, part of the reason I always loved Camilleri is this was a guy who actually seemed to relish playing in Montreal. And it's really, really rare that you get a player like that who understands what it means to put that uniform on and who likes the pressure, who thrives under the pressure. You know, I still remember when we signed him on I guess it would have been Canada Day of 2009. It blew me away, because when was the last time that there was this big, big, big fish in the free agent pond that Montreal actually went out and got? And yeah, you know, maybe we probably offered him more than any other team did, but this was still a guy who could have played for any team in the league, and he wanted to come here because he actually relished the pressure. And I think you need guys like that to play in Montreal, and there aren't too many of them in the league.
All right, what do you say to the people who say, yeah, but apparently he was not well liked in the locker room and may have been somewhat of a problem in the locker room and creating some division in the team?
I mean, I'm not in the locker room, and you never know how bad that stuff is. And maybe that did play a role. And you know, if that was a factor, if he was really a locker room cancer, then yeah, maybe you do take that into consideration. But I also do think that these things tend to get blown out of proportion after the fact. I mean, the mere fact that Calgary went and picked him up, I think to me shows that, you know, he's not a pariah. You know, this is a guy who was in Calgary, signed with Montreal, and they traded for him. If he was just absolutely despised in the Flames locker room, they wouldn't have traded back for him. So maybe there were some issues there, but these are the things that, you know, you always tend to hear these whispers and these rumors after the fact when things are going poor.
Well, I heard these rumors beforehand.
Yeah, but you never, I mean, you know, the chatter is so much louder now. You never hear this when things are going well. It's always this character assassination after the fact.
All right, let's switch to the guy that we're getting back. What are your thoughts on Rene Bourque?
Bourque's okay. The one thing that I will admit, it wasn't a horrendous trade. I hate losing Cammy because I think he was an all-star caliber player, a franchise caliber player, and I don't think we're getting, you know, equal value in return. I think if you get the best player in the deal. Nine times out of ten, you're going to win that deal. And Calgary easily got the best player in this deal. You know, Bork's a good 25-goal guy in Calgary, at least. We'll see if he can put those numbers up in Montreal. But, you know, he's big. He puts up good numbers. That being said, he's a guy who makes Camilleri look consistent.
That's unfair because, I mean, looking at his numbers, he scores pretty much the last two seasons he's put up 27 goals.
Yeah, but he is incredibly streaky, even more so than Camilleri, if you look at his numbers. And, you know, he's a guy who I think Bob McKenzie said that his, you know, give a crap meter fluctuates wildly.
Mm-hmm.
And guys like that, you know, sometimes it works out and sometimes they don't respond well to the pressure of playing in Montreal. So I'm willing to give it a shot. It is nice to have a 6'2" forward.
Yeah, I mean, the argument... The net,
but I have a bad feeling that we're going to see him, you know, that this might be Benoit Pouliot 2.0.
To that degree?
Not to that degree. He's okay. A much better player, but I do think he's got a, you know, a bit of underachiever in him, and I think, you know, if things start to go poorly, they could snowball very, very easily.
Well, I don't completely disagree. I do think there's going to be frustrations that we have with Rene Bork going forward because of what we've kind of heard about this guy, you know, how much he puts in, day out. But on the other hand, he's big. He does the things that for a long time people have been saying we need somebody who can do what he does, which is get in front of the net, play with some size, and play a little bit of edge to him. I mean, he's somewhat of a loose cannon serving a suspension right now, and I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing to bring to the Habs at this time.
Fair enough. I just, you know, I could be wrong, but I think Steph Darwish in the forum put it best, saying, you know, this is a guy who could very easily be toiling away on the third line in two seasons from now. I think, you know, we look at his numbers and the first reaction is, hey, 6'2", 25-goal scorer, but Calgary's a much more offensive team than system than Montreal was. You know, he's playing with Jerome Iginla. It's a guy who's always been very streaky. I think, you know, if you put him in the right situation, if things are going well in Montreal, he's a nice piece. I think if, you know, he's one of your building blocks going forward and we have more seasons like this in store, I think it could be a disaster.
I don't think at $3.33 million he has to be a building block, though. I mean, he feels more like a piece than a building block.
Fair enough, but you still traded away, you know, your best forward to get this guy. So, yeah, he's a building block, but you want to get more than a building block in return for your best player.
That's fair. I'll give you that. You came on here a little more sensible than I expected.
Yeah, I'm.
Ranting, raving text I was getting, you've lightened a little.
Yeah, and I've cooled off. Not because I love the trade anymore. It still breaks my heart that Camilleri's gone. But you cool off a little bit. I mean, I just couldn't believe it was a really surreal experience watching the game on Thursday when, you know, Cammy doesn't come out for the third, and all of a sudden he's traded and. You know, who knows if it had to do with the comments he made.
Do you think it did?
I don't know. You're hearing conflicting things. On the one hand, you're saying this is a trade that's been in the works for a month now, which would seem to make sense because
you've heard whispers,
and Camilleri has struggled, and the team's obviously in quasi-rebuilding mode. So I do think there have been discussions, but I think it probably accelerated the process, which, if that's the case... You know, to me, that just underscores the problems in Montreal where we have a front office that really overreacts to every little bump in the road. I mean, to me, the comments that he made were, well, A, they were accurate, and B, even if they weren't, I didn't consider them all that incendiary. I mean, they weren't, you know, he wasn't speaking in glowing terms, but I really, really didn't think what he said was all that bad, to be honest with you.
No, I'm with you on this one. If it wasn't something that was in the works, or, you know, even... they'd only kind of scratched the surface of this deal back in early December. And if his comments led directly to the trade, and as you say, if he wasn't a big problem in the locker room, then yes, it's the wrong decision. And there are a lot of ifs within this equation.
There are, and I think the thing that I'm tired of more than anything is, like I said, just it's really hard to build a team when it's just constant controversy. It's controversy after controversy. It's crisis after crisis. And, you know, the vultures in the media are circling. And you just have a front office that's not secure enough or intelligent enough to stay the course. If they're reacting and making panic moves to every sort of perceived crisis, that's not a plan to rebuild. And, you know, I think I tweeted this or I put it on Facebook that I can't believe I'm saying this, but Montreal needs someone like Brian Burke. And the one thing that Brian Burke does really well is that he tunes out all the bullshit that comes with playing in a hockey crazed market. And, you know, he, whether it works or not, he's been rebuilding on his own terms, whereas Pierre Götze seems to be far, far, far too thin-skinned and too vulnerable and too, you know, willing to appease the media on every single up and down of the season.
I find that kind of surprising that's the conclusion that some are coming to at this point, though, because up until not that long ago, Pierre Götze seemed to be a guy who actually thought he was far more intelligent than everybody else and was going to basically do the things he wanted to do and couldn't give a crap what anybody else said.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually, but it seems that the season has done a complete 180, whereas...
who's really pulling the strings, though, on this thing?
I still got to think it's him. I don't think he should be, but to me, this move, you know, the Cavalier move especially, they reek of desperation moves. And, you know, if it was someone else pulling the strings, I'd have a bit more of a long-term vision. I don't think they're making these moves, but to me, these are classic moves made by a GM who's, you know, scrambling to save his job, who's in panic mode.
All right. You got, is there anything else you want to get out there?
No.
You feeling
it's just
okay?
Too bad. I really thought that, you know, I know the it's rare that you get a guy like Jerome Iginla or Shane Doan,
yeah,
or you know, a guy who's going to be your franchise mainstay for 10 or 15 years. And maybe Camilleri was never going to be that guy. I understand that. But to me, Camilleri was really a guy who, you know, both on and off the ice, seemed to relish playing in Montreal. And, you know, he was a dynamic forward. He was, and even if there were problems in the locker room, he was great with the fans. He was great with the media. And it really seemed like we had a chance here to have a player who could sort of connect long-term with the city. And then 2.5 years later, he's gone. You know, it's just, to me, it speaks of, you know, sort of the lack of stability on the franchise and just panic move after panic move. And I'm just sick of these rent-a-players. I want something more concrete, more long-term, something a bit more cohesive.
All righty. Thanks for chatting,
buddy. All righty. Yeah.
Cheer up.
I know. I enjoyed the Mike Camilleri era. I did.
Well, I mean, they definitely had its flashes of pure brilliance.
It did. And I have never bought a non-Montreal Canadiens piece of apparel, but I think I'll be buying a number 13 Calgary.
You're really going to do that? It's not going to be number 13, you know.
Yeah, that's probably true. Whatever number it is, I think that might be my first non-Canadiens purchase.
That's interesting.
And I shan't be buying a Rene Bourque shirt.
Well, I've already ordered you one. Coming in the wearing number 27.
A number which, by the way, should be retired.
Right across the league?
Right across the league.
The great Alex Kovalev.
How dare he wear Kovalev's number?
Yeah, the guy, a real legend. All right, get better, bud.
Yeah, I'm sorry to all the listeners. I am hurting a little bit, but I felt compelled to share my views on the Mike Camilleri era.
Well, yeah, and I figured, you know, the way Alex and I were swaying on this thing, we had to get somebody who was certainly not even mildly happy with it at all. So,
no,
we got you in here. We got your grumpy old man on us.
Yeah.
All right. Have a good one.
All right. Thanks, man.
All right, welcome back. Still speaking with Alex DeZan.
Still here.
Zach Fanas, still here. This is the part of the podcast where we... what are you, breaking my chairs?
Yeah, just
all right.
The one chair.
Can you just not break my things and just do a podcast?
What I want.
All right. So we're going to take a look at what we got coming up schedule-wise for the Canadians. Although I'm caring less and less what the future holds
the
at this point. So looking forward, we got the Ottawa Senators coming up on Saturday night, a team that I think we can both agree has surprised us considerably this season. Could you make an argument? No, you could make an argument. Would you say that perhaps Mihalik is the MVP this year?
I don't even know. That's so, like, I don't even know how to think about that because I would have laughed in the person's face who suggested it prior to the season.
Yep.
Like, there's just been such...
Right now, they look like they won the Heatley deal.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, I agree. It's really odd, but yeah. That's why you have to give time to deal.
We got two games this weekend. Saturday, Sunday, we play both games, 7 o'clock. New York Rangers, here's another... I mean, we've really got three teams that are on the up and up right now. Ottawa, New York Rangers on Sunday. The next Wednesday, Washington as well.
It certainly isn't a gimme week by any stretch, but I mean, when you're sitting in the bottom, when you're sitting in the basement of the East, it's,
nothing's
every
a gimme.
Game's going to be tough.
Yeah, precisely. I mean, at this point, yeah, you want to see him win, but I think at this point we're more interested in what individuals do, what kind of seems,
what
management does. So Ottawa, I look forward to that game. It'll be, you know, if Montreal can go out and get those 2 points there, that's necessary. As Pat Wallace wrote on the Bias though earlier this week, it's important that we beat the teams that we need to beat at this point.
Yeah,
losing to teams like the New York Rangers. We need to get those 2 points here and
there.
But at the same time, those aren't the things that are detrimental.
Yeah.
It's losing to Washington, who seemed to be on the rise. Losing to Pittsburgh coming up on Friday as well. Those are teams you need to actually beat if you want
to
prayer,
show up for
if you want
to
make the playoffs. And I mean, I guess we still have to keep trying.
Yeah.
Even though the odds are
that's
against
the thing.
Us.
Things in the East are still tight and have been all season, shockingly tight. So, I mean, that's the type of thing if... Because there are teams that are overachieving and there are teams that are underachieving.
Yeah.
So if teams start playing toward their potential, meaning those who are down go up and those who are up go down, there could be some changes. I mean, it might not involve us, but I guarantee you the playoff picture come end of season is not going to look like it does now.
No, certainly
that's
not.
That's for sure.
All right, let's get into our three stars.
Three stars.
Star number three for you.
Star number three of the week. Firstly, we need some type of preamble. When you get... lose 2 games, one in an abysmal shutout
easy.
Where you don't show up, one in a game last night with a fluke goal to begin
I'm not joking when I say I keep forgetting they played against the Boston Bruins last night.
Yeah, I know. Well, we talk about overshadowing.
Because we drank too much, and I don't remember.
I would say first star of the week, I'm giving to... third star of the week, I'm giving to Cole. Firstly, scored in Tampa. No one did anything in St. Louis. You can't give anyone credit for anything that happened in that game.
Certainly no one in Montreal.
But last night, I'm giving him credit. Because when Subban got his elbow up on Krejci in front of the bench, Lucic went after him.
That's how much is going on. We didn't even get into Subban.
We didn't talk about that. Cole was the first guy on Lucic. And I was talking with a friend tonight, and he said, it's not like he just, everyone grabbed a guy for the dance because two guys were really going at it, and he got stuck with Lucic and thought, oh, shoot, here I am stuck with Lucic. He saw that someone was going after his guy, and he jumped on him.
Yeah.
And that's why, Desharnais can't do that because of his size. You have guys that can't even do that because of their size, even if they are going to, both draw penalties for being irresponsible or something. Still, Cole went in there. Cole stood up for his buddy in a game you're losing where you might need that fire. Third star to Cole.
My third star, I know we're more than a week removed now from Lars Eller's 4-goal performance against the Winnipeg Jets, but Lars Eller gets my third star because in that game, against the St. Louis Blues, nobody looked like they had a chance to score except Lars Eller. And Lars Eller looked like, he was going for it.
I'm sure he had some fire.
His former team, and he knows he's not stupid. In fact, I think Lars Eller's a pretty smart guy, to be honest with you. He knows that, scoring in that game changes the book on him a little bit at this point. Like, suddenly, there's even less controversy about the Halak trade. He was playing, and he's continued to play going forward.
Game,
yeah,
he's looked good. And also, he's smart enough to know that in Montreal, if he scores on Halak, people would say, oh, the deal was right. We got the deal.
In the same way some idiot said the deal was wrong because Halak got a shutout in a game that the easiest shutout of his 19, career.
That's because he played a horrible team who took 19 shots.
Exactly.
19 shots.
There was one player who seemed like he was going to maybe beat Halak that night, and it was Lars Eller, and that's why he gets my third star.
Yep. There we go. I will say second star might be surprising some people in a week where we lost 2 of 3 and had a no-show against St. Louis.
Yeah.
But my second star is going to be Randy Cunningworth because for the first time this season... In a game against Tampa Bay where we were leading going into the third, I saw us trying to score goals.
Yep.
And I think just for that, you can tell that there has been...
Cunningworth
doesn't have much to work with right now. But you can already tell that there's been some type of a shift in the ethos of this team, in the idea of how this team should move forward. Yep. And that doesn't involve 5 guys sitting behind the red line and dumping the puck every time. They're leading going into the third to try to win the game.
Because that clearly didn't work for us.
And actually, that type of pressure is what gave us that two-goal lead, is what gave us the go, like, to go from 2-1 to 3-1.
Exactly.
Like, that's what, you can't stop playing hockey when you're winning to hope that you end up ending the game with that score.
And the best play of PK's season came in that game as well.
Which?
He made a big play, and then a beauty pass to Pacioretty. Great defensive, perfect pass to Pacioretty.
Yes, that was great. That was great.
My second star is going to go to Carey Price. Because it was hard to come up with anybody this week. In the beginning of that game against St. Louis, I mean, the better goalie, despite the fact that Halak got the shutout and the first star of the night, and, you know, awesome return for him, no question. Mm-hmm. Carey Price made some phenomenal saves. There was a point in that game where it looked like Carey Price was going to completely rip the headlines away from Halak by standing on his head when his team brought absolutely nothing to the table. For his sake, they should have brought something to the table, because he's the guy.
Exactly.
He's been our best.
Dealing with this pressure.
Exactly. You know, if there's anybody who, more so than Lars Eller, and he looked like he was ready for that game. Yes, they scored three in the end, but he could have made one save. One of them was one he had a chance on. The other two, the team put him in ridiculous position. He couldn't see past Hal Gill.
If there was a definition in Webster's for being hung out to dry, mm-hmm. I mean, it's this season and what the Habs defense has done.
Yeah, if there was some stat that we could come up with goalie most often hung out to dry by his team, Carey Price blows every other goal.
Goals that could have been avoided with general competence, that type of statistic, where I swear we could remove a goal
and
a game.
He also gets my second star, and I've talked about this with Sean on the podcast before, so people who have listened know that I thought Eric Cole should be the guy going the All-Star game for Montreal. I thought he should have been the rep more so than Price, because Price is, you know, in terms of what he's capable of, even he's not having his best season. And he's having a B-plus season, and usually he's an A to A-plus goalie.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, that being said, though, and I know, and I tweeted this as well, I know these things don't mean all that much in the grand scheme of things. But on the other hand, in that same grand scheme of things, we have a 24-year-old goalie, 24 years old, now a three-time All-Star.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that.
Come on.
That's great. And, like, I was thinking about putting Price as a star, too, just because, like, to see him go out there when you know, like, everyone knows, like, we are likely going to lose every game.
Seems like that at this point.
We've joked, but I'm semi-serious about how I get happy when we score a goal. I think it's incredible. We score a goal, it's like, oh my god, how do we pull that
out? At what point in the St. Louis game, at least for me, I'll say, midway through the second, I knew Halak had a shutout in that game. I knew we weren't going to score.
You just feel it. You can just sort of sense it.
How do you go out there as a goalie? Knowing if you let one in,
you have no goal
there's
support,
a good chance you're going to lose that game.
That's
where we are right now with,
like,
this team.
For Price to give him credit for last night's game, too, an absolute fluke goal. The type of thing that happens once a season.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Fluke first goal, go down.
Otherwise, Montreal gets at least a point in that.
1-0 between down in the first 2 minutes of the game. And the whole team responded, and Price made some big saves down the road.
Against the most terrifying team in the NHL.
Exactly. Yeah.
Carey Price, my second star. All right.
Yeah. Maybe my first star is a bit of a cop-out. I was thinking about saying Rene Bork because he changed his Twitter pic to a sweet Habs logo.
Well, now you just stole exactly what I was going to say.
Oh!
You know what? I'm going with my first star, Rene Bork, because the guy's happy to be in Montreal.
He is,
everyone's bitching and moaning because Cammy's gone. We just got a guy who can score 25 to 30 and is big. Like I say, I don't hate the deal. I don't love the deal. I think maybe we're somewhere in the middle on this thing. But let's embrace that Rene Bork's excited to be a Hab.
Montreal fans not only love to criticize everything, but they even like to criticize themselves and one another and say, you know, they acknowledge, at least generally, that we make it difficult for people to want to come here. We make it difficult because it's such a critical fan base. Like, let's realize that that's what's happening and say,
he's excited. He's legitimately excited.
Yeah.
We should get excited that he's excited.
Exactly. We got a guy who might bring a bit of life. I don't know if it's sustainable. I don't know how streaky he's going to be. Let's just see what happens.
But this is a miserable ass season.
Let's not condemn
him. We got a guy coming in who right now is excited to be going to this locker room, which I don't know that any of these guys are at this point. That's my first star.
Yeah, my first star is Gauthier, and I'm just giving him that, firstly, because he absolutely botched the Cabrelle deal. It was absolutely horrendous.
The fact that the word Cabrelle deal is there proves someone botched something.
And he didn't, you know.
Here's a quote that I
don't even know how to jokingly try to make that deal.
Here's a quote that I heard just after the Cabrelle deal went down. Somebody said to somebody, I'm completely forgetting all the relevant details of this story, but somebody said, oh, hey, the Canes trade a Cabrelle. And the answer wasn't for who to evaluate. The answer was, that came from the other person was, oh, good for them. What'd they get in return? Yeah. It was irrelevant.
That's exactly, Bob McKenzie told that story.
It was McKenzie that told
and
that
he
story.
He told that story, and it was Carolina's, it was, sorry, it was, shoot, it was another GM speaking of Carolina's move.
Right.
And that GM said, like, whoa, they got rid, he didn't say, oh, they got rid of Cabrera or, oh, they traded Cabrera. They said, oh, they got rid of the Cabrera deal? Amazing. What'd they get for it? That was it.
You don't want that. I'm sure the same thing was said by everybody when Scott Gomez came to town.
Yeah, exactly. And, yeah, so I give it to Gauthier just for actually making a move that...
After saying all that.
Yeah. For that, a move that, what, like, you're giving him... I can't believe I'm giving him credit for not making a second abysmal move. But the fact is that it's something of a creative move that, well, may or may not look good in context with future yeah. moves. That's
okay,
what I have to
so
say.
Also... To speak to your first star at that point, you can sneeze. It's okay. I see you're fighting it. You okay?
I'm okay.
You gonna be okay? So we're watching last night, and word comes across, and as we go into the antichambre,
which we were forced to watch, which had to have had
the highest ratings it's ever had, yeah. right? Besides a playoff run, because we needed to know. And we heard Cammy was dealt, and I was devastated. Because I literally assumed Goatse had just done it. I can't believe I kind of like this
Sean O'Neill
deal.
Texted us and he said it better not be Bo Meester. And I was like, oh. Man, we are assuming
but the,
failure
but we,
right
we
now.
Expected that.
Yeah.
So I guess first started Goatse because he didn't do... Yeah. He didn't absolutely botch it.
You know what else I found funny and probably holds no significance and just coincidental? But the other rumor we heard just before it broke that it was Calgary and it was Bork was that we heard to L.A. for Dustin Brown. And I was thinking, like, why is it that two of his former teams are shopping him, apparently? Maybe the LA one was completely false.
I hope he spoke to someone beyond Calgary.
Yeah,
like,
it would be nice to know that there were maybe other people in contention. And
let's stick with these GMs speaking. And I know a lot of kind of the backlash against Gauthier today came from the fact that there were some GMs out there who said, oh, I didn't know Camilleri was available. He never spoke to me. And this Joey, who contributes to the bias, brought this up to me today, and the BS that comes with something like that.
Yeah, that's interesting.
That's a I think he used the example of, it's as if I sold you a snowblower for $50, and somebody else all of a sudden goes, "Oh, you sold it for $50. I would have given you $100 for it.
Yeah.
Why didn't you tell me?" Like, yeah. It's so easy after the fact.
Yeah,
and it's true. And don't tell me
and
these
also,
other. There's a competitive advantage. You get to take another hit at the Montreal Canadiens.
And that's the thing is you also don't
the arguably like, most hated franchise in the NHL.
Yeah, and I mean you can also say I mean take any team for example, but if
we would have listened. Who's not going to listen?
But if you hear that a GM said, "Oh, really? They were shopping Cammy? I didn't know." Then it's so easy to say, "Oh man, that team has so and so and so and so and so and so. That would have been such a better."
They're
deal.
Not going to give you whatever
give
names
you're
going
to
suggest.
Say. Yeah,
they're not going to give you those names.
Yeah, what? I didn't know Pittsburgh was interested. Maybe we could have got Malkin. Like,
yeah, exactly.
I mean, obviously that's a little absurd.
No, but that's exactly. It's easy for these GMs after to go, "Oh, you should have called me. I would have listened." And what would you give? Like, honestly, what?
Maybe they literally
would
have done just that. Maybe they would have listened and said, "Nah,
I don't like these GMs who are coming out now saying, "Oh, they should have mentioned that Camilleri was available."
But what do you do? It's not like when you're shopping a guy, you're thinking of making a move. Do you think they send a forwarded email to the 29
How
other
does
GMs.
That work, do you think?
I would like to know
how that works.
It must be complicated, and it must
Which
be,
proves how
and,
uninsidery this podcast
and it's
is.
Got
we
to,
pride ourselves
firstly, it's
on
Firstly, it's got
that.
To differ with every deal. I mean, you can't...
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes
well, because
you must
maybe
have
you're
guys
targeting
in mind.
A guy.
Yeah, exactly. You must have someone in mind, or an idea of a guy.
Of what you want.
Size. I want a reduced contract. I want someone younger.
Yeah, there's certain teams you're not going to call.
Exactly.
You're just not going to call... Well, you're not going to call any team that's near the cap.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. You're
that literally in this situation, you essentially rule out any team that is maxed out because you don't want it to whoever they have for $6 million that you would have to the exchange would have to be made between the two. Probably you don't want back.
Well, if they
want
to trade someone, if they are as willing to trade someone who is getting paid $6 million, they're probably unhappy with what they're paying.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Like whoever is getting this that a team's willing to part with is somebody you don't want in return. Mm-hmm. In all honesty.
Completely, that's got to be how it is.
So, I don't think he needs, and I do think maybe he could have shopped him more.
Yeah. Maybe. But we also don't know.
We
honestly really don't know. Like, the fact remains that the deal was not atrocious.
The deal was not atrocious. That's what we've been talking about, the first star. Because the deal is
what kind of standards have we reduced our season to now.
The deal is not atrocious. Our goalie lost two games, and he gets a second star.
Yeah,
and Lars Eller I gave third because he tried hard.
I'm giving Cole third star because he scored a goal and like touched Lucic after he went after PK.
Welcome to your 2011-2012 Habs, boys and girls.
I can't wait to see how desperate we get by the end. Yuppie's going to make multiple appearances in our top threes.
Could we deal Yuppie?
We could deal Yuppie. See, we could block. Upgrade to the Raptor guy?
Oh, no.
Across sports. The Philly.
Well, no, nobody's trading
cousins.
Philly.
You don't want to make it that.
He's like the Michael Jordan of Fanatics.
That's true.
Of Fanatics? Of mascots. He is the Fanatic. All right, that'll do it. Thanks, Charles.
Hey, it's good to be here.
Appreciate you coming around and doing this.
We got to do this more often.
Yeah, you weren't very good. Okay. This is probably the last time you'll hear from him when Sean returns. But, you know,
I swear I'll write an article in a year.
He's working on one. He's working
four
on one.
Articles. Shut up.
Is that what you've done now? Mm-hmm. Good for you, buddy. All right, thanks a lot for listening. As always, in case you're looking for this somewhere, you've clearly found this one, but you can find us on iTunes. You simply need to write in Montreal Canadiens. We'll pop up there. You can also search in iTunes, the 2-4, clearly, the Montreal Bias. You'll find us that way. And keep checking back. We're going to be posting articles. Do you have anything in the pipeline that we should discuss?
Give
the kids a preview.
Well, firstly, there is, I think we are going to get to a point in this Camilleri discussion where things are going to get a little more complex. And
yes.
Once we begin to be able to assess the deal, I mean, expect a lot of comments from all of us, I would certainly say.
I would
say,
think so.
Especially in the next week or two.
We'll see what happens.
See what happens.
It's a weird, weird season. Weird season.
Here's to the journey in the future.
Welcome, Rene Bork.